1 Corinthians chapter 13. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and have not charity, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in parts, and we prophesy in parts. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity. Well, we trust that God will richly bless us through that portion from his precious and holy word this evening. Last week we started this all-important chapter on the subject and importance of charity. It doesn't matter what gifts a person has, it doesn't matter what type of sacrifices a person makes. Without love, everything is pointless and worthless. Love is the fulfillment of God's law. Love covers a multitude of sins. So when we're looking in God's word today, and we're finding out what God requires of us in our day-to-day lives, the main thing which we need to pursue is this wonderful virtue of charity. And once we have love within our hearts, everything else will fall into place. You see, all sin can be traced back to a lack of love, whether it's selfishness, or pride, or hatred, or malice, or slander, or evil speaking, or covetousness, or envy, or lust. It all comes down to a lack of love, a lack of charity. If we love others, then we don't sin against others. It's as simple as that. That's why the apostle says in this chapter that we should pursue charity. It's more important than everything else in the world. He described it in the last verse of the previous chapter as being a more excellent way. You see, the people in Corinth were very desirous of spiritual gifts. They were looked upon as being the be-all and end-all. The most gifted person was held in high esteem. If they had been given wonderful gifts to exercise in their ministry in the local church, people admired them. And as a result of this, this desire for gifts, there was much strife and envy and division within the church. People were jockeying for position and competing with one another as to who was the most gifted. But not only that, there was also immorality in the church which wasn't being properly dealt with, and there was heresy in the church where many people were denying the biblical doctrine of the resurrection. There was much pride there as well, as people were divided into different groups and different camps, and each felt that their little group was more important than the others. Some were saying, well, I'm of Paul. Others were saying, well, I'm of Apollos. And others were saying, well, I'm of Cephas. And Paul condemned such language and said it was wrong for people to be comparing themselves with one another. If only the people at Corinth were half as interested in seeking after this wonderful virtue of charity, then these other things would not have held such a sway within their lives. Well, Paul imagined in the opening verse what it must be like to be able to speak fluently in many different languages. Languages which he had never learned, languages which he had never applied himself to. If he was able to speak fluently in other languages, and also he had this remarkable gift of being able to communicate with angels, how wonderful would that be? Without charity, it was all pointless. Doesn't matter how many languages you can speak, without love, it's all worthless. It means absolutely nothing to God at all. He goes on in the second verse to speak about other amazing gifts which a person might receive. Though I have the gift of prophecy, he says, and understand all mysteries and knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, and have not charity, I am nothing. Now, Paul didn't claim to be able to do these things. What he was doing was imagining a scenario that he had all these marvellous gifts and he was able to do all of these things. And he's saying, without charity, it's pointless. Compared to these wonderful gifts, if I don't have love and charity within my heart, then all these gifts count for nothing. Charity is more important than them all. Well, prophecy was a wonderful gift in the New Testament church. In chapter 14, prophecy is very highly recommended and much to be preferred in the local church, much more so than the gift of tongues. Now, when we think of prophecy, we often think about things which are going to happen in the future. We have a section of books in the Bible called the prophetic books. Many people find it a little hard going because they find it difficult to understand what's going to happen. But the prophets in the Bible weren't just used to speak about the future. They were used by God to convey messages to others. So some had to speak to kings about their behaviour. Some would give guidance to various leaders to tell them what they should do. The prophets in the Bible were very useful characters to have around, and their ministry was very edifying. However, it wasn't just a gift that everybody had. There were some people who were prophets, and there were some people who were not. Prophecy was a gift from God. And of course, in every generation, including our own, there are many false prophets. People who claim to be sent by God, but their teaching is not in harmony with the scriptures. And even in the New Testament church, there were people who claimed to be prophets, but they certainly weren't. Paul said, if I had this wonderful gift, it would be pointless and worthless without the grace of charity within my heart. Now, some people say, well, do we have prophets within the church today? And there's a verse in Ephesians that says that the church has been built upon the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. So once the foundation of a building has been laid, it doesn't get laid a second time many years later. Then Paul goes on to say, well, if I could understand all mysteries, and if I could have all knowledge, without charity, I am nothing. Well, imagine having somebody like that in the church who was gifted in that way. Somebody who was able to answer every question that a person put to them. Somebody who was like a walking encyclopedia. They're a fount of knowledge. Somebody who could also understand all mysteries. They could understand things which people have wondered about and debated about for centuries. Imagine if a person had that perfect understanding. Of course, nobody does. And Paul himself didn't claim to understand all mysteries. He was saying, well, even if I could understand all mysteries, even if I did have all knowledge, without charity, it would be pointless. Well, people have always been interested in acquiring knowledge. Our minds are very limited. There are many, many things in life which we can't understand. And it's not God's will for us to understand. We can only understand those things that God has revealed to us. You know, sometimes people say to us, well, what was there before this world was made? Who made God? And all sorts of questions like that. Well, we only know what God has revealed to us in the scriptures, that God has always existed. But what happened before this world was made, that's not been revealed to us. God is completely sovereign, and he knows what's best. There are many things which we don't know, and there's no shame in saying that we only have limited amounts of knowledge. The most important thing is that people have got the knowledge of the way of salvation, and people are at peace with God. That's the most important knowledge to have. It actually says in the scriptures that we're not to know about all things. The secret things belong to the Lord, it says in Deuteronomy, but the things which are revealed belong unto us. And then it says in Ecclesiastes that we know not or understand the way of the Spirit, or how the bones do grow in the womb of her which is with child, even though in the same way thou knowest not the works of God who makest all. But even if somebody was to be able to understand all mysteries, and didn't just have some knowledge, but they had all knowledge, how remarkable that would be. Now, sometimes you hear about a very brainy child. They might be about 6 or 7 years of age, and we're told that they can speak about 3 languages. Or by the time they've reached the age of 9 or 10, they can do very complicated sums which even adults are unable to do. But that's nothing compared to the person being described here. This is a person who knows absolutely everything that there is to know about every subject, and they've got all their knowledge and all their facts correct. Any question put to them will never go unanswered. They're able to store in their minds all the information contained in every book, in every library, on every CD which has been manufactured in this world. Could you imagine having somebody like that around? There are many things which we don't really understand. Our minds are very limited. If you had somebody who could understand all mysteries, well, of course, people would be queuing up to ask them questions. There's 101 different things which people would like to know the answer to. Well, Jesus said to Peter on one occasion, "That I do, thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter." Yes, though Peter was a great apostle, he didn't have all knowledge. There were certain things which he didn't understand. And the Lord said, "You will understand it better by and by." And there's some things in life which we don't understand the whys and wherefores. We have to trust in God. The Lord knows best. He is all wise. And we leave everything to him. Why certain things happen in this world may be baffling to us, but we just leave it with the Lord. Now, our minds can only absorb a certain amount of information, and then we forget so many of the things which we have learned along the way. Even Paul himself didn't understand everything, far from it. Now, Paul was different to some of the other apostles. The other apostles may have been humble fishermen and tax collectors. Paul was actually quite well educated, being brought up at the feet of Gamaliel. But even he had a very limited knowledge. And the knowledge which they had in those days was very limited to the amount of knowledge which is available to people today. Paul said in 2 Corinthians, "We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed," he said, "but not in despair." And people have found great comfort in that word that Paul says. We were perplexed, didn't know the answer to lots of situations. Maybe didn't understand why certain things happened. Well, are you perplexed at times? Don't always understand the purposes of God in your situation? Well, don't be surprised. Even Paul himself was perplexed. He is imagining in this verse that he had the gift of being able to understand and unravel all mysteries. And he had all knowledge. And said even if he had such a gift, without charity, it would be worthless. Now, in chapter 8 of 1 Corinthians, Paul made that statement that knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. Given the choice between knowledge and love, love is by far the most important thing of all. God is not looking today for people to have so much knowledge, but those who have lots of charity within their hearts. It's charity which is the fulfillment of God's law, not knowledge. And I suppose in many generations, particularly in previous generations in our own nation, there was a tremendous pride in learning. Some people thought that because they were well educated, because they had passed many exams, had titles and letters before and after their names, that they were better than other people. But charity never, ever, ever leads to pride. If you have a person with lots of charity within their heart, you have a very humble, very self-effacing type of character. It says concerning charity in verse 4, that it vaunteth not itself, it's not puffed up. If a person has a lot of love within their hearts, they will also have the grace of humility. But he goes on to say that if he had all faith, so that he could remove mountains and had not charity, he is nothing. Well, I suppose all believers are interested in acquiring more faith. Faith is something which is so important in our lives. We want to trust God more. The disciples said to Jesus on one occasion, "Lord, increase our faith." And Jesus was always looking for faith in his followers and commenting on it as well. How often when he healed somebody, he would say, "Thy faith hath made thee whole," or "Go in peace, thy faith hath saved thee." Faith was something which was very important to the Lord. And he said to the disciples on several occasions, "O ye of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? O ye of, where is your faith?" and so forth. And Jesus said in the Gospels that if a person had faith as a grain of mustard seed, which was a very small quantity, they could say to the sycamine tree, "Be thou plucked up from the root and planted into the sea, and that tree would immediately obey you." Elsewhere Jesus said that whosoever shall say to this mountain, "Be thou removed and be cast into the sea," and does not doubt in his heart, but shall believe those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Yes, Jesus spoke about that. He spoke about people with faith which was able to remove mountains. Well, imagine having faith like that. Wouldn't every Christian like to have faith like that? Sometimes we bemoan the fact that our faith is very small. Now, most Christians don't have any doubts when it comes to their personal salvation. They know their sins are forgiven. They know that they have peace with God. And they know when their life comes to an end, God is going to welcome them into heaven. Well, they don't have any doubts about that. But sometimes Christians find it hard to trust in God in their day-to-day circumstances. If they've got accommodation problems or financial problems, or they've got work-related problems or problems in their families or their personal life, can they trust in God to bring them through these difficult times and to support them and to sustain them through it all? Well, imagine having faith so you could say to a mountain like Mount Everest, "Be thou removed and cast into the Indian Ocean," and immediately the mountain would move and would end up at the bottom of the sea. Now, sometimes when we read Christian books, we praise God for characters who exhibited much faith. People like George Muller, for instance, he had great faith, and he trusted God to provide for the needs of all the hundreds of orphans within his care. He didn't appeal for any money. The Lord just sent, often on a day-to-day basis, the amount of food and money which was required. And he found that the Lord never ever let him down. Now, we have different doubts and different fears in our lives, and I suppose all of us are wrestling with these things, and we would all love to have stronger faith. But imagine if somebody, as a result of their prayers, was able to remove mountains. I think it was Mary, Queen of Scots, who said that she feared the prayers of John Knox. And you could almost imagine that this godly man, he knew what it was to acquire answers with the Lord. And Mary, Queen of Scots, was thinking, "Well, if this man is praying against me, then I'm going to be in trouble." Wouldn't we be delighted to have somebody like this in our own church? Wouldn't it be nice to have somebody like this in our prayer meeting? But even if a person had such great faith, even if they were able to achieve such supernatural answers to their prayers, without charity, they are nothing. Compared to charity, charity is by far the greatest of the two. Now, the last verse in this chapter actually says that now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three. But the greatest of these is not faith. The greatest of these is charity. Now, we speak about the importance of faith, and rightly so. Without faith, we're told in Hebrews, it is impossible for a person to please God. We are justified by faith without the deeds of the law. By grace are ye saved through faith. It is not of yourselves, it is a gift of God. Not of works, lest any man should boast. All of God's law is summed up in loving God with all our heart, soul, mind and strength, and loving our neighbour as ourselves. So it's also true to say, without charity, it is impossible for a person to please God. But of course it's important for every local church to embrace and to teach all the important doctrines of the Bible. That's absolutely essential, that people should embrace the biblical way of salvation to be at peace with God. But it's also very, very important, according to the scriptures, that every local church should be a place which is full of charity. In Titus chapter 2, we read that the aged men should be sound in faith, in charity, and in patience. Now, many churches, they may be sound in faith, they may believe in all the important doctrines of the Bible, but God would ask them, are they sound in charity, and are they sound in patience as well? Do they have the grace, do they have the love to accompany their faith in the Lord? Charity is of tremendous importance. But all these wonderful gifts which are described in these verses would make a person of tremendous worth. Imagine being able to speak fluidly in lots of different languages, which you've never studied. Imagine being able to communicate with angels. If there was angels in front of us, we would be able to communicate with them. I suppose not all angels are able to speak and understand English. Imagine being able to understand all mysteries, and to have all knowledge, and to have all faith so that a person is able to remove mountains with their prayers. How wonderful is all of that? But far more important than all of these gifts combined is charity. There's no virtue in having these wonderful gifts if a person has a heart which is void of any type of love. Well, in the third verse, he goes on from speaking about different gifts which a person might have to the sacrifices a person might make. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Is it possible today for a person to give all their goods to feed the poor without being motivated by love? Well, it most certainly is. See, a person might make a big sacrifice and not be motivated by charity at all. They could be motivated by pride, for instance. They want people to think well of them, to think how kind and benevolent they have been. When a celebrity does something for charity, you can be sure that they like to keep the media informed as to what they're doing. And suddenly the media are tipped off that they're going to do this charitable event, because they think it's good for their image and good publicity. We may do something good for somebody today, but our natural heart would like other people to know about it. And as one person once said, if they find out from somebody else, that's even better, because then we won't be accused of blowing our own trumpets. Well, to give some of your goods to feed the poor, particularly in those days when there was much poverty, is something very praiseworthy. But to give all of your goods to feed the poor shows a tremendous amount of love. If a person held nothing back, if a person gave every single penny to helping out the poor and needy people, if they haven't been motivated by a humble and charitable heart, then it doesn't profit them anything. But it may profit the poor people, but it's not going to profit them. There's no virtue in that as far as God is concerned. Now, the Pharisees were very strict and very disciplined. They knew what it was to make these sacrifices. They gave of large gifts into the treasury. And they wanted many people to know about it. They would blow a trumpet. They would draw attention to the fact that they were giving a very generous gift to the synagogue and to the temple. They wanted everybody to know about the size of their gift so that they might get praised and rewarded for it. Well, Jesus said, the fact that they're praised of men, that's their reward. They're not going to be getting any reward from God, because these gifts are given without love and without any charity. These gifts were of little worth to God, because what God is looking for today is not primarily money. God is looking for love and devotion to God and compassion and mercy for others. People don't impress God with their financial gifts alone unless they stem from a heart which is full of love. Could you imagine a person parting today with every penny they have? Not just those who are giving out of their abundance, but they've got much more money in store, but somebody who is giving all of their goods to feed the poor and they have absolutely nothing back for themselves. Now sometimes you have pop singers who've got millions in the bank, and they're always appealing for people to give money to help the people in Africa. They want the poor in Africa to be fed, but they don't necessarily want to part with any of their millions in order to feed them. So they're always having a go at the government saying, well, this government should be giving more money to help these poor people in Africa, but they're not interested in parting with any of their millions and millions of pounds themselves. They want people who are a lot more hard up to dig into their pockets and to contribute. But if there was a person who had millions in the bank, and loads of money, property and investments, and if that person decided to give every single penny to the poor, and they themselves became terribly poor in the process, well, people would admire them for a sacrifice, because they would say it's cost them something. But what Paul is saying in these verses is, compared to charity, all that a person owns, all the money which a person has, is of little worth. Charity is far, far more important than all the millions which a person might be able to give. Without charity, it doesn't profit them or do them any good. That's what God is looking for. And then he mentions an even greater sacrifice. If I give my body to be burned, without charity, it profiteth me nothing. Well, a financial sacrifice is very small compared to the ultimate sacrifice when people give their own lives. Job said, when he was tested and tried, the devil said to Job, all that a man hath he will give in exchange for his life. And it's true. If a person had a terminal illness today, they would travel halfway round the world if there was a possibility of getting a cure. They would part with every penny they had in order to be cured of their disease. I think it was Queen Victoria who said when she was dying that she would give everything just to have an extra moment of time, either Queen Victoria or Queen Elizabeth I. In many Muslim countries in the Middle East and North Africa, kidnapping is rife. If a Westerner is captured, a large ransom is demanded by the captors. And there's even lots of pirates in places like Somalia who are taking control of all these ships and threatening to kill the people on board. Those people who are captured, they're taken as hostage. And many of the authorities don't want to pay ransoms in case it might encourage kidnappings to continue. But the relatives of those people who've been captured do want the ransom to be paid because they want to be reunited with their loved one. Even if it costs them all the money they have, relatives will give it in order to have their loved one brought back again. But here it doesn't just speak about a person laying down their life in some type of painless death. You know, some people today, their lives are taken for them. Taken from them. They may be murdered or knocked down by a car. But here it's speaking about a person who's voluntarily giving up their life, not to a swift, painless death, but giving their body to be burned, to suffer terribly. What a terrible, terrible way to go. Now we can read a book like the Fox's Book of Martyrs, and we can admire those brave men and women who were burned at the stake for their faith. They must have suffered a terrible amount of pain. But even if a person was to make such a sacrifice, without charity, it wouldn't profit them anything. Every year at Easter time in the Middle East and other lands, people choose to have nails hammered into their hands, thinking that if they identify with the crucifixion, it will bring them some type of merit before God. Their photos are taken for the papers, and people admire the sacrifices which they have made. But you know, God doesn't require this of people at all. His commandments are not summed up in self-mutilation, but in charity. Charity, that's the thing that God is looking for. When Richard Bennett came, he was speaking about how he wanted to be a good Catholic before he was converted. And he suffered many things. He used to have cold baths. He used to whip himself. And he felt the more he suffered, the better it would be for him in eternity. But it wasn't true. You see, what God was looking for was the most precious and the priceless gift of all, love. That's what God was interested in. And compared to any sacrifice, even the ultimate sacrifice of a martyr's death in a very, very painful way, love is a million times better compared to them all. People are willing to make big sacrifices today, but without faith, without charity, these things do them no good at all. Well, charity is such a wonderful virtue. And what they're saying in this verse is, pursue this thing more than anything else. Wake up in the morning and say, Lord, I want charity within my heart. Because charity will most certainly cover a multitude of sins. Well, we'll go on next time, God willing, to look at the different qualities which are found in charity. But let us learn from today's passage that gifts and sacrifices, no matter how great and noble they are nothing compared to this choice and precious virtue. May our hearts be full of love for God. May our hearts be full of love for others. May God give us in abundance this most precious gift of all. And may we praise God for the greatest gift that he sent his own dear son to die in our place on Calvary. And we read in the scriptures, it was because of God's love that his own dear son was sent. May all that we do, all that we sacrifice today, all come from large and loving hearts to the glory and to the praise of God.